Okay, so let's begin this evening's meeting of the Finance and Facilities Committee, April 29th, 2013, and it's about 6:33 in the evening. Would you take a few minutes or take a minute to review and approve the minutes from the April 8th meeting?
That's good.
Okay with that? All right, then the first order of business this evening will be the 2013-14 preliminary budget. And I'll walk through this. As you know, the board has been presented with many different background data that's necessary prior to us putting together this budget. We started with capital projects last fall. The board has seen different recommendations coming through with regards to personnel. You've seen the increases that have come through for salaries or for benefits. So all of that is precursory work prior to actually putting this budget together. Just a couple of dates that are out there. Obviously, we're going to present this to the Finance and Facilities Committee this evening. I thought I would bring it back for one go-through with the Finance Committee after the new Finance Committee is sworn in. I believe that's May. When the meeting that I'm referring to would be the second meeting in May, which is May 28th maybe or 24th. So we'll bring you back the budget one more time for that Finance Committee. And then we'll bring it to the board for discussion on June 10th. We'll be posting with the board's permission on June 24th. And then my recommendation is that we move this budget for approval at the first board meeting in August. So that's sort of the big calendar, the big events that will be taking place, the calendar of events, and sort of the different things that are incorporated in this budget itself. You know what? I'm going to go to revenue line first, and I'll just run over again total numbers. $43,189,000 of property taxes. You have a $42,892,000 in real estate taxes. $297,000 is a special levy for a total levy of $43,189,000. You have other sorts of other local revenue that will total $2.9 million, which are student fees and. To the corporate personal property replacement taxes, special ed tuition, interest income. In case you don't know, interest income continues to be an area of concern. We're getting 2, 3, or 4 tenths of 1% of interest income. So when we look back 5 years when we were receiving probably $1.2 million annually, it's now down to about $160,000. Food service is up substantially with the implementation of the hot lunch program at the elementary schools. Student fees are being held at their last year's levels. Total local revenue of $2.9 million other local revenue of $2.9 million for total local revenue of $46,094,000.
Bob, which of those is
developer donation fees is in other revenues? That's the $21,000.
Okay.
And I think I mentioned it. We just saw a pretty sizable check come through within the past, 2 months, Phyllis?
There's been a few. Yeah. Chapel Hill are built, so those are coming through. And then there was another one, another subdivision, I can't remember what it was, but they're starting to be built again.
Yeah.
So they're trickling in.
It was, several years since we've seen any real donations in terms of developer donations. But I know I saw a check come through with around $24,000 to
$25,000
just recently.
Are they donations or
required? No,
they're currently working. We call them all the donations.
Okay.
It's actually
it's like being volunteers.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
And then we have general state aid of $1.3 million. That's what we had last year. Now, I'm going to tell you that as we move through this budget cycle in the next couple of months, We're hearing that general state aid may be reduced by about 15-16%. So that number could change, may change before we bring you the final budget. And then the different types of categorical funding for total other or total restricted grants in aid of $1,990,000 for total state revenue of $3,312,000. Then we have the various federal programs for a total of $754,000 for a total revenue of $50,161,000. Then we can move to the revenue chart. And so what does it look like? Where do we get our funding from? 92% is generated locally, 86% from property taxes, 6% locally. So like I said, a total of 92% state funding and 7%. My feeling is it's probably going to go down a little, and then 1% federal funding. Okay, then we'll move over to the the expenditure side. And we have the various funds as well as programs, or actually the functions as well as the objects. In total, if you work through the various funds, you add O&M, transportation, bond and interest, the Social Security funds, and so forth, you're going to see that we have $29,157,000 dedicated to salaries, $5.7 million to benefits, purchase services, almost $5.5 million, supplies and materials, almost $2.3 million, equipment purchases, capital projects, equipment purchases, almost $2.2 million, and then other objects, of which a large amount of that is tuition to other school districts. That's $5.3 million for a total of $50,091,000.
Bob, did you say 5.3 million tuition?
No, I said 5.3 million dedicated to other objects, of which probably the largest expenditure there is tuition.
Is tuition. Okay.
And
sorry,
that could be $1.2-1.3 million. Okay. So, what does that look like in terms of a pie chart? That's 69% of our expenditures are spent on salaries and benefits, and that's a pretty good figure. We figure between 70 and 75% is typical to what most school districts dedicate salaries and benefits to. And then we have purchase services at about 11%, our supplies and material at 5%, and then equipment and capital purchases at 4%, and then the 11% are the other expenditures. So then, I wanted to do some comparison here. Mike, can you move that over a little? There we go. So, comparisons. You have just been reviewing the amended budget, so this is a budget as it's the amended budget, it's not the original budget that you originally saw back last year. So these are the numbers that you've just recently seen. The 12-13 amended budget, you have the, I missed that, should be 13-14 preliminary budget. And so what does that look like? Property taxes are increasing $4,248,000. And the majority of that $2.8 million is a result of us again levying in the bond and interest fund. Other local revenues?
I was going to say we have to preempt people receiving their property taxes because they're going to see 10%, 11% increase in District 41.
Yeah, we talked about that.
And
yeah.
They need to be explained that over 2 years they didn't pay. You were paying $100,000. You didn't pay $105,000, and then $110,000. You paid $110,000 once.
We have a communication that we put together, but I have to tell you, Steve, it's one of those things. After reading it, I'm sort of like, okay, we can put it out there, but I don't know if people will actually one grasp it and two I think you're right.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying we could say we tried.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, it's sort of like it'll be interesting because nobody noticed
that we abated
money, but they'll notice when we go back to normal.
Right.
So we do have something, but it's, as Julie and I talked, it's a lot of language. So trying to explain the concept with the least amount of language.
Well, I don't know if I can improve this budget then, since I can't explain it to the average.
Oh, thank you.
The average resident.
Thank you, Mr.
Well, you can. We know you can.
Right. So, well, but Steve brings up a good point for the board.
I know what you're
saying. In terms of talking points for board members, yeah, especially our new board members, to be able to explain that differential.
Talking about our communication, Julie, on the difference.
Before yeah, people start opening and comparing what they paid last year.
Right. And if you... Julie has some numbers. I think if we had not abated last year, the increase, the true increase, is about 4%. Mm-hmm. It is 10.91% because we did abate, but that number is actually around 4%.
Yeah, I think the best way to explain it is I would have paid, you know, X amount of dollars more over 2 years. You know, let's say it's $100,000, and then I get a 5% or 4% increase. So last year I would have paid $104,000. Mm-hmm. Then this year I would have paid $110,000
mm-hmm,
or whatever. I paid $14,000 over 2 years ago,
right,
whereas now I've only paid $10,000 over,
right,
or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've got to put it in dollars over 2 years.
If we can create the visual in money, mm-hmm, that's a good point.
Yes.
What was the CPI for this levy?
This levy was 3%.
From
2 years,
2 years ago,
December of 2011, right, for the 13-14 budget, because it's at two-year late.
Right. So in terms of revenue, you were talking about state going down 16%.
Well, we don't know that yet. That's kind of what we're hearing. I have not made any adjustments. Because
that's what I wanted to know, if any adjustments were made.
No, I have not made any adjustments yet. You know, I think I saw you at the in the audience last Monday at the legislative program that was put on, and you know it's always interesting to me. You get politicians in the front of the room, and you know nobody mentioned they're talking about funding education, but nobody bothers to mention the proration that's occurring. So we don't even know what we're going to get this year. We're hearing it's going to be cut back. If we may not receive mm-hmm our 21st or 22nd payment, we'll know shortly, but we have not definitively heard that yet. And I say the same thing to you guys every year until yeah I hear it. I can't really react to it. Mm-hmm. But as soon as I do, we'll update our projections. And, you know, Sandy P was called today.
Oh, did she?
Yeah.
Well, now you're teasing us with that information.
What did Sandy? Oh, I had called to complain about some proposed legislation a couple of months ago, and she mm-hmm kind of got back.
Okay.
Which was fine.
Yeah.
She'll get back to sleep.
Let you know it already passed.
So what?
No, she says it has been, Steve, her words were, it has been buried in committee and it will yeah never see the light of day.
All right, then.
That's good.
So, as I said, property tax is $4.2 million. I left other local revenue flat. State funding has increased $25,000. We'll have to continue to take a look at that. The general state aid has remained flat, but some categorical funding came up a little bit. It may have been even, you know what it was? It was probably transportation that I increased by $25,000. Federal funding, I just left flat until we hear more in terms of what our expectations are. So what do our expenditures look like? Salaries of $1,258,000. We rolled the salaries 4% this year, as you know, as a result of the recently concluded negotiations. That went up 3.8% for next year for the GIA staff. I took into consideration potential retirements that we have out there, and then any staffing recommendations that the board has seen or have been accounted for in this very preliminary budget. Again, we'll continue to make updates and update our presentation as we progress over the next couple of months. Benefits increased by 1.89%. as you know, for those that sat in the negotiations, by the time we worked through that small change with the pharmaceutical, PPO plans went up 0.8%.
0.1%. I have 0.1.
Was it 0.1?
That's what Lori gave
me
today.
It could be. It's under 1%. Under 1%, and HMO came back at 2.1. So blended, it came back at about a 1.89% increase. Purchase services, we went up 7.35% or $376,000. And that really is a reflection of the tech plan that has been, you've seen produced or introduced to you folks over the past couple of months. We have a pretty significant increase to that line item, some of which fell into purchase services, some of which fell into capital expenditures.
Mm-hmm.
So you have purchase services up 7%, you have capital equipment purchases up 16% or $307,000, and then other dues and fees up $238,000 for a total increase of $2,290,000 or 4.79%. Any questions on the expenditure side? So we take a look at this a little bit differently in terms of here are our various funds, revenues and expenditures by fund. The education fund revenues went up $1.2 million, O&M $169,000 down to a total of $4,274,000. Again, expenditures up $2,290,000. And so what does that look like in terms of surplus or deficit for all the funds? The education fund, I should say all but the O&M and the Social Security fund will be showing a surplus this year. Total surplus is just over $70,000. That's our first go around in our projections for this year.
Bob, how does that square with where we were in terms of the deficit that we carried with the levy?
Well, last year we had a projected deficit of $2 million, revised $1.9 million.
Okay.
So it's a balanced budget, but we have had, we really ramped up our spending on technology and a couple mm-hmm. other programs over the next year. And so those are reflected in this latest presentation.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, first run through of the budget, I should say first run through the first time you've seen it, we're talking about a $70,000 surplus. Mm-hmm. Any questions?
When do you do the, you do a two-year just to kind of see things out there? I think that's in terms when you talk about the levy.
Yeah, 2 years is what I typically have been bringing that presentation to you in October, when you'll see prior to the levy, prior to our sort of setting the table for the levy, I bring you that the functional analysis and then the 2-year budget projections. And that usually starts in October.
Just, I was trying to think what the, we know the CPI, what was the CPI we just got?
CPI that we just did was 1.7% in December. So that will be for the budget 2 years out.
I'm just wondering, so if you had a 3% increase in revenue this year, you're going to see that drop the year after that.
Well, I tell you what's really interesting. At the recommendation of Steve about 6 years ago, we used to use a 10-year history in terms of making our projections for the levy, and we abandoned it. We go right to the township officials now.
Mm-hmm.
And when I called those folks back in November, early December, they thought new construction for our district was going to come in excess of $10 million this year. It came back at $6.6 million. So I was pretty surprised by that. Now, it's that lagging effect. We see a lot of construction going on in the area. Maybe those numbers will tick up. But I was surprised to see that the township, particularly Milton, was off $3.4 million in our projections for new construction. And that does have an effect on our levy.
Okay.
And Bob does put known CPI into the five-year projection. So we do know, generally speaking, what we're going to be dealing with.
Yeah, like right now, we know out a couple years in terms. The only wild card now is that new construction and EAV, which, again, is still trending down. Overall, a couple of things that came in when we get that final levy in March, a new construction came in at $6.6 million, and EAV went down 6.7 or 8%, I think I told you, right around there. So not 7%, but not much less than 7%. They say home prices are stabilizing, property values are stabilizing. We'll see how that's going to roll out.
I don't understand what new construction does, because I thought the district asked for dollars and it's just applied across.
Well, we will get additional dollars for new construction.
It's a fudge factor to add in new. We all pay it, not just the new construction people.
Right. Right, it's just the first time we're seeing the value of that property, the increased value of that property, on the books for the first time. It may have been an older home, it may have been vacant property, it may have been whatever it may have been. But this is the first time we're seeing an equalized assessed valuation on that particular piece of property.
What about that property on the corner up there? Is that
1.3 acres or something?
Is that taken off the rolls?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
maybe they'll sell it
now, isn't it?
If they sell it commercially, it will go back
up. Whoever buys it, they pay back taxes.
Yeah. They do want to sell it commercially.
Tip it or whatever. So that's the presentation, first presentation on the budget. I'll be happy to, if you have any questions as we move through the next couple of months, be happy to send me an email and be happy to answer them to the best of my ability. Again, we'll bring this back for presentation. We need to take it to the board for discussion in early June. We'll bring it back to the board for authority to post it on June 24th, and then we'll look to adopt a budget at the first meeting in August. So that's our plan for the next couple of months with regards to the budget. The next order of business then this evening is the bid results for the lunchroom pocket tables at Franklin and Churchill. I was asked very recently to go out and bid new lunchroom tables. We did a complete replacement of the lunchroom tables a couple of years ago, 3 years ago maybe, at Churchill. And Franklin has had some issues with theirs and need to be replaced. And at both schools, we're looking at expanding the additional space that will be required for lunch because they're moving to a single lunch period.
They're requesting to move to a single
lunch
to go period. Into their gym.
Mm-hmm. Right. The Churchill project, we maintain the tables that were just replaced in the past 3 years in the MPR, and then we're going to do about a third of a wall in the large gym at Churchill. And then at Franklin, we're going to implement the single lunch period in their large gym.
And then that will take out the tables in the multipurpose room that are unusable.
And I would say what we did 3 years ago is we didn't scrap those tables. We used them to use replacement parts when we needed them over at Franklin. So we have continued to use those, and they are 13 years old, 14 years old. So I think during the 97 referendum maybe is the last time they were replaced, so we're looking at maybe 16 years now, and they are certainly falling apart. So we've gotten the useful life out of them, and we'll just continue. So this is the recommendation.
Okay.
A little background, we published the bid on March 28th. Bids were due back on April 4th. We sent bid packets to four vendors, and three returned the bid packet. The old bid was Lowry. Three vendors participated. It was Lowry McDonald, School Specialty, and Carroll Seating. Those are really the three players in that market. And the winner, or at least the low bidder, I should say, was Lowry McDonald at $90,542. School Specialty was next at almost $99,000. And then Carroll Seating was the high at just over $107,000. This is complete removal reinstallation, just rendering the spot back in the condition that it was left, except that we'll have tables there now. Additional cost will be associated with the additional cost of personnel with going to a single lunch period, because we'll need to open another line, and then some capital cost for some additional serving tables for implementation. Our plans are to bring this back to you again for discussion and then action at the meetings in May. And then last week, we just received the updated intergovernmental agreement, which will take into account the increased food service as well as the implementation of the breakfast program at Churchill. So we have that updated. We'll start that review process with the Finance Committee on May 13th, and we'll step that through the usual board process. So when we bring the IGA, we'll have a spreadsheet attached that will give you an analysis of what our expectations are with regards to the food service program. Any questions on this recommendation?
Is it safe to say that the increase in revenue from the lunch program can offset some of these additional costs?
I would say it's...
Why not?
Did I would say both?
No. The revenue from the lunch program is strictly meals.
It's all meals.
Strictly meals, not equipment.
Right. I know they're separate, but...
component of your staff are covered by the lunchroom supervision. So, it basically is meals because of when you're part of the National School Lunch Program, you're limited by what you can charge for a meal to begin with.
Right.
Because there's free commodities involved. We now can access free commodities, which a lot of our meals are based around. So we're actually using product we're not even paying for. Mm-hmm. We're getting it from the government. So there's all the yin and the yang of it all.
Yeah.
Since the total time is less, though, won't we believe there need less supervisors or less time?
Still less time.
Yes. So the lunch supervision piece is, it will be shifting from being a multi-period to the single period.
So the cost could be almost a wash because you'll have less time for them.
Right. But we have to increase some server time because they have to be able to now get
that many more kids.
More kids serving less time.
Or to get more servers. Not more server time, just more another server in the building.
Another line.
Churchill is the only one. Well, actually, as it turns out, Churchill is the only one that has to add a second line. Franklin will be able to do it amongst them with their current staffing right now. So
it probably will be. It may be a slight cost savings. We have to probably do that analysis: the time versus the staff.
And the intention is that when we bring these at the intergovernmental agreement, we'll give you updated food service projections. Any other questions? Then the final order of business this evening is the elementary physical education technology recommendation. And Mike, I'll leave that up to you.
And this recommendation comes from a larger proposal from the elementary PE department. So there are two big or two larger tech components to that. The goal here is to integrate in an audiovisual solution in all the gym areas. We already have a solution in place at Churchill in the multipurpose room and in the gym. It's a long throw projector, so the projector is mounted on one wall in the gym, and then it projects across to a large screen on the other side. The screen's about 14 feet by 16 feet. This has been in place for a couple of years at Churchill, and is widely utilized not just by the PE department, but also for after-school programs, for institute days. It gives us an opportunity to have a big display, a big video presentation display. Mm-hmm. And the PE teachers will also utilize it during gym class for more interactive visual portions of the program. Since we had already installed this solution at Churchill, we approached the vendor that had done the work. That was Chicago Office Technology Group. They had installed the projector. And the cost that we got back per installation is $11,635 per installation. That includes all the parts, materials, installation, projector. So that's front to back the entire installation, and it'd be five gym areas total, since Churchill was already done. Forest Glen, both multi-purpose room and large gym, would get the projection solution. At Franklin, it would just be the large gym. And at Lincoln, it would be both the multi-purpose room and the gym, since those spaces are utilized for PE as well as after-school activities. So total cost for all five gyms would be $58,175. And that would be purchased through a one-time purchase from budgeted funds from the 13-14 budget year, and the plan would be to move forward with these installations during the course of the summer and incorporate that into the rest of the summer projects that we have. Any questions?
How much is just the projector?
Pardon?
How much is just the projector?
Just the projector. Mm-hmm.
Is this mostly installation?
Yeah, because I was looking at the ones we're putting in the presentation room, and it was half the cost, so I was trying to understand why those...
Well, this is a different type of projector. It's really the lens that costs the majority of it, and the NEC projector is $2,695.
Yeah.
The lens itself is $1,980. So this is a highly specialized projector.
How much has the
ball, isn't it? Right, the lamps. That we
how long did they last?
The refresh price on that yet. But
okay.
So total cost is just under $5,000. For the projector and the lens. So we're not talking about the same type of projector that we'd be looking at in a standard demonstration area, which might be a little bit bigger than a classroom.
Right.
So since we're having to kind of, rather than mount it from the ceiling, which is something that we'd also do in a standard classroom, since those ceilings are so high, to be able to really mount that would be an extended pole. Usually that winds up vibrating, so you get that kind of shimmy, and makes it very difficult to look at for any length of time. So we kind of try to avoid mounting on those high ceiling surfaces. So the best solution to be able to accommodate this application will be these long throw projectors. So you're talking about much brighter lamps in those projectors, plus a specialized lens that will hit that kind of distance.
No, they're just watching videos of...
No, they use it. They'll be doing their presentation on their curriculum at our next meeting. And so they will give you some indicators of how they use it in their classroom. But predominantly, it's used for modeling and assessment. And so when you've got two classrooms in the gym, and it allows there to be a modeling a skill up on the projector while the teachers are able to then distribute themselves among the students while they're practicing it. Same for assessment. If you don't have it, you've got one teacher modeling and the other teacher trying to see all of the students. So it allows the teachers to be able to access this technology in a way that it's like adding another human being in a way into mm-hmm. your room. Now there are some applications that they also will use that are demonstration applications that then the kids follow. But I think one of the greatest benefits of the projection is the assessment and the modeling feature.
And there are some interactive components that they add. The Xbox and the Kinect system, so you've got the motion sensitive technology involved in there. And some of the applications they looked at were Fitness Evolution, Kinect Just Dance for Kids, Just Dance 4. So they'd be utilizing some of those applications as well. Mm-hmm.
Which again, they are able to demonstrate up on the screen while the students then are practicing and the teachers have a greater access mm-hmm. to hands-on with the kids.
And that's something that at Franklin they've been doing for several years. But in the past, because they've been asking for several years for a projection mm-hmm. system in that gym. So in the past, what we've done is we've wheeled in a projector and have them project up on the wall, which isn't the greatest solution, but it at least achieved what they needed to do mm-hmm. for that particular event.
When I was at CIT, I think it was a month ago, Ian, two PE teachers from Franklin and Lincoln,
mm-hmm.
presented their update to their curriculum, and part of it was based on the usage of infusing the technology. And I'm going to get the language wrong, Ian, but they did talk about, because Steve is asking a good question, they did talk about the difference between teaching a skill and
Well, an activity.
Right.
They've revised their curriculum to be really a concept-based curriculum centered in fitness concepts. And so rather than being an activity-driven curriculum, it's really much more of a cognitive-driven curriculum focused on skill development for health and wellness and fitness. So it's a very different, it's a big shift from PE of the past, you know, where throw the ball out. And they still
you
do
a
that.
Unit. They talked about that. You do your unit, you do the skill, and then you move on, where this is a more integrated
right.
approach.
And they still teach a skill. So, I mean, when they're teaching, you know, throwing, for example, they'll be able to, and they have some really neat assessment pieces where they show, you know, they'll demonstrate throwing. And then they have the ability, some application that they have on their iPad, where then kids demonstrate their throw and they can actually, the line shows how they've done mm-hmm. in accordance with what it should look like and what the kid actually did, which is really cool because, you know, PE used to be if you're a really athletic kid, you get a good grade in PE or you meet in PE because you're just naturally able to do those things. Now it's much more related to skill development and not necessarily are you, you know,
naturally,
can you throw with the farthest?
Athletic,
can you,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
can you run the fastest? Those kinds of things. It really is. Do you understand the concept behind the skill and to the degree to which you can demonstrate them? So I think they've done a great job with their curriculum. And we'll see it. We'll get a glimpse of that next week or next month.
We just haven't heard that piece of it, which is why I wanted to make that point, because this is really integrated with the way they've updated their approach.
We'll give them an opportunity to further utilize the iPads that they were provided last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that we'll project those as well.
Mm-hmm.
How often, the way the current enrollment, if you had four sections per grade, K through five, how many times a week does everyone have PE, and for how long?
Every day PE, except kindergarten. Every day PE for 20 minutes.
Which I remember them saying is another value of shifting the curriculum and looking for the...
That's 30 minutes.
Looking at the tools.
Five schools with 450, three sessions would get longer. How would things change?
No, we probably would share teachers.
Share teachers, we'd have fewer teachers.
Mm-hmm. Well, we may have the same number. We may have the same number of teachers, but they'd be moving from school to school.
Oh, okay.
They wouldn't. You wouldn't have. In other words, instead of having two full-time teachers at Churchill, you probably have one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess I'm saying if we were just to add classrooms, or we have four whole classrooms now.
Mm-hmm.
We have enough gym space, or are we kind of doing things with the gym space we have?
If we just added additions to house temporary housing, well, we have where we have the greatest strain is Churchill, where we've had to add additional staff because the number of sections are too great. So we might have added.
Is there enough gym space? How many PE classes?
Well, then they use the multipurpose room if they have to, mm-hmm. and that's true of the other buildings as well.
We didn't have kindergarten PE in the classroom.
Because
they didn't have enough
gym
space.
So,
and we had to hire a part time.
Well, they got a projector there.
Move the chairs down.
So is the projector, is it like in a cage?
Uh-huh.
Right, yeah. We actually incorporated the cage afterwards. I think Dave Stromardo was able to find a better deal on the cage for us. So.
And the screen, is it always down? Is it only
coming down? No, the screen is it's motorized. So kind of like the old screen here. It's a motorized screen, so it'll descend or retract. Electronically. So I think normally they'd have that pulled up and high enough where hopefully most balls aren't going to reach it.
Show movies on the weekends.
Well, the PTA does does use it, and we've used it extensively for professional development when it's at Churchill. So
I think we pay
staff meetings. It'll be great.
We pay just under $2,000 for the rights to be able to show like Pixar and Disney movies. So. I know they've done that in buildings afterwards. So, or even indoor recess that are utilized often for those kinds of things. So, they're pretty widely used. I know they are at Churchill for a lot of different events.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Then that's all I have for this evening, for this evening's meeting.
Are there any candidates?